They'll follow. Sidesteps to the trail. It's with ease. It's 3-on-3. Lee Broxham busting a gut to make it 4. Calfella slides it through. It's Lee Broxham! Game over! The grand final won for Melbourne victory through Lee Broxham. And Amy Park is all navy blue.
It certainly was navy blue, and the 90s went berserk, as fair enough to, after a premiership and championship season with a mighty Melbourne victory. Warren Diego, a big part of the 4 Diegos, 11 till 12 Wednesday nights on SEN, has been good enough to join us this afternoon. G'day, Warren.
G'day, Half. Good to speak to you. And can I say that Simon Hill's a great caller, but I think he called it a little bit late. I reckon it was almost game over in the first 10 minutes of the game. That's how much Melbourne victory dominated the performance. They were just outstanding from start to finish. And really, as a spectacle, I suppose it was a great spectacle with a big crowd and lots of noise. But as a game, it was just very much dominated by Melbourne victory.
But there was all, you're right, Warren. I agree with you 100% in terms of the game. Wasn't there to experience the atmosphere live myself. Would have loved to have been. But to watching the game, it was dominated by the Melbourne victory. And even Keith Finkler, I was reading an article or an interview with him this morning. They're saying that the first 20 minutes were the key. That was one of the big focuses, to really put the clamps on early and set the agenda for all the game. In the first 20 minutes, they did that. But what happened was there was only that one goal. Bessart Berisha's unbelievable left-foot strike in the first half of the game, which kept the door open for Sydney FC, and they had a couple of looks in that second half. So it was never as emphatic as it was from play. It was never as emphatic on the scoreboard, which kept it really interesting.
Yeah, it's one of the things, I suppose, that we love about the game of soccer, football, as it is known across the world, because either side of half-time, the Alex Bross shot just before half-time, and then the Mark Yanko header as well, were probably gilt-edged chances for Sydney. And I suppose what you probably find in most sports is the winner, the deserving winner normally wins, if we know what I mean, the dominating team. Yep. And in this instance, the victory did win, but I suppose what we love about the game of football as well is that it only takes one chance to get back into the game. But Sydney was so dominated and so out-muscled in all areas of the park that it was hard to see where the goal was going to come from. And even if the goal did come, you probably saw the victory just being able to continue to create the chances that they were able to create eventually and win the game. I think, look, the upside for Sydney is, under Graham Arnold, they've come from a long way in one season, if you think about it. And they've also come from a long way since the Asian Cup break, where they were going through a flat spot, had lots of injuries before the Asian Cup break. But after that, were really able to go into that great goal-scoring form. They were a bit inhibited. I think Mark Yanko failed to score in his last 5 games. And even though Alex Broth took up that slack towards the end of the season, there just wasn't as many avenues to goal as what you'd expect. And as such, the Melbourne victory, who I said this to Carlos on the Diegos, and I genuinely feel that, I think they're almost the best team that we've seen in the A-League in the history. I know they haven't got the record of Brisbane, but in terms of talent, strike force, and just genuine depth across the field, I think they're the equal of Brisbane, and I think they'll go on and prove that over the next couple of years.
Yeah, it did seem to be throughout most of the season that you're right, that they were the dominant team in the competition. I'll bow to your judgment as to whether or not they're the best team in the last 10 years, but they certainly were the best team in the competition this year. Took out the Premier's plate, took out the championship as well. It was a really, really good performance. Kevin Muscat's been a talking point in the last couple of days since that grand final victory. Warren is the first man to hold up the trophy as a player and now a coach, and has announced himself on the global stage. We heard from him the other day on the run home. Do you think he'll seek opportunities elsewhere once his tenure at the victory is up?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think for an Australian coach like Kevin Muscat, if we put him in the same sort of breath as a Ange Postecoglou, say, who in his first coaching stint, Ange did this with South Melbourne, takes them to a championship. Ange then moved into national coaching with the Ollie Roos before looking at backing club coaching, and then we know what's happened. I think Kevin, as an inexperienced coach, would be absolutely silly in some respects now to look at overseas coaching opportunities. He's effectively got one next year, half, through the Asian Champions League. Yep. And we know that what that's done to Tony Popovich. And I think Popovich has created an aura about him being able to be competitive in one type of competition, the domestic competition in Australia, but then to go to another level against teams with bigger budgets and also lots of more global players and a lot bigger than Australian teams without salary caps. So I think you'll see Kevin Muscat actually looking to broaden his skills with the Victory, take them into the Asian Champions League. And then I suppose the debate is really going to be, where does he see himself possibly as a national coach? Because I think Ange Postecoglou has really treaded the path now that you would be thinking that Australians are going to coach the Socceroos going forward. So he puts himself in the same, you know, the same space as a Tony Popovich, say, in terms of maybe being the successor to Ange Postecoglou. And that's going to be something that he's going to need to consider. Could he coach overseas? I think the one thing that you've got to give Kevin Muscat credit for, he took what Ange Postecoglou had created and he made it better.
Yeah.
And there can be no doubt about that. This year, it's Ange's team. He went after Berisha. He went after Del Pierre. He got Ben Kalfalar. And some people would say that he's improved Ben Kalfalar. Young players have continued to come on under his tutelage. So as much as he divides opinions, perhaps in the way that he plays, and even the way that he sometimes conducts himself, in pure man management coaching circumstances, he's got to be one of the best coaches we've got going around, and of course he can go overseas.
Were you a believer that he would be able to translate his experience and his wisdom on the field to a coaching role?
Yeah, it was an interesting one because I wouldn't have said so before he had the year under Ange Postecoglou.
Okay.
Remember, he retired and then had that year where Victory had multiple coaches and really had a poor season.
Yep.
And then Ange Postecoglou. I think the year under Ange Postecoglou has made Kevin Muscat, but again, he hasn't changed his style. He's still combative. He's still aggressive, both in terms of style of play and also his overall attitude. I don't know. I mean, ultimately, he's proved he can do it, and good luck to him and good luck to the team. And you've got to give Melbourne Victory credit because there must have been a temptation. They're a big club. They could have got the biggest overseas coach they could have got. They could have gone for a range of different coaches, but they went for Kevin Muscat as a favourite son, and he's delivered in spades.
That year you mentioned when the Victory had all that turmoil from a coaching point of view, I remember Drakovic was around and
Jim Magilton,
and
yes.
Harry Kuehl was sort of part of that scenario as well, and that didn't quite work out as they planned, I wouldn't think, from what he gave to what they expected at the time. How important do you reckon that was for the club to reset? Because they started the competition, they started the A-League history really, really well as one of the big powerhouses, and then almost fell away to be just an also-ran team. Do you reckon that was the time that they reset the compass and said, righto, we've got to be better than this and we'll start from now?
Well, I think it galvanised them, half. And I mean, how about we use an AFL example now, the likes of Melbourne and Carlton? You know, long periods of success, long periods of failure after periods of long success. I don't think you can just assume that it's going to happen. And maybe they could have been, you know, very much apathetic. You know, we're the biggest club in Australia. We've got the most support. Things will just evolve and they'll happen. I think that season made them aware of the fact that, you know, that old saying, if you're not looking to go forward, you're going backwards in professional sport.
Yeah.
And I think they were going backwards, but it took them to go after Ange Postecoglou. And that was probably advantageous to them on the back of Ange doing what he's done in Brisbane and then feeling like he wanted to come home and prove a point with the biggest club in Australia. So maybe they were fortunate by circumstances, but you've got to go out and get the guy. And then if you think about it, they went out and got the players like Costa Barbarousis and other players that they actually wanted into the squad. So that makes a huge difference. I think Victory now, they should be the banner team for Australian football in the Asian Champions League. No disrespect to Western Sydney Wanderers, but I actually think that the Victory have got some global significance in terms of the crowds they attract, the fan base they've got. I really want to see them go off and be really aggressive in the Asian Champions League and prove that they can manage two competitions. And that would be, you know, fitting for a club of their size and their support and in all honesty, their class in terms of the players they've got. And if they manage to keep this group with or without Archie Thompson, there's no reason why they can't be a very competitive side in the Asian Champions League when they take part in it this time next year or a little bit earlier in the season.
Warren Diago from the Four Diagos, who'll be back together tonight, 11 till 12 every Wednesday on SEN, is our guest this afternoon. Just before we get to Mark and Matt Waverley, who's basking in the afterglow of the victory on Sunday, Warren, has there been a more poorly timed holiday in the history of mankind than our good friend Carlos Alberto Diego's trip to Thailand.
Yeah, well, you know, Harf, it's all about Carlos. You know, he pretty much makes his own decisions, runs his own show. So are we surprised? No. Is it poorly timed? Absolutely. But, you know, just when I think I've got an opportunity to actually run the show and stuff, he finds somebody else to do it. So, look, you know, as I said, we know what Carlos is like. We love him, but we also know it's all about Carlos. So it doesn't surprise me at all.
As far as I'm concerned, never a more poorly timed holiday. Anyway, he's in Thailand. He missed the A-League Grand Final. And it's great to talk to you about it today. Let's get to Marky Mount Waverley, who wants to talk to you about the victory by his boys on the weekend. G'day, Mark.
How you going, guys?
Yeah, good, thanks.
I just wanted to make the point that as potent as the victory looked in the front half or in the front third, I think the inclusion of the big French central defender, Delpierre, was the biggest recruit they could have made. I think he looked so controlled and so strong on the ball, and his positioning was far better than Leia would ever be. I mean, Leia's a good servant of the club, but he came in and he's stronger, he's faster, he looks more at home on the ball, he's... execution from the back passing out was perfect. So I think he was our biggest recruit for the year.
Yeah, got no argument from me. I actually think that he was probably the most significant aspect of the victory's performance if you think about the last 6 or 7 weeks of the season, where they went from a defence that leaked goals to a defence that was able to keep clean sheets. And that's where you're going to make the most of your potent attack force. Delpierre looks to me... And he is, because he's won a Bundesliga title in Germany with Stuttgart. He just seems to me like a classy European central defender. And he's going to be a very important player as far as the victory. And you talk about Adrian Leia, who left through the season to get a good contract overseas. Really, Nick Ansell's been able to come on. He was injured, had injuries during the season. Maybe there was some doubt about him. And they've also, I mean, it's also allowed Mr. Fix-It Lee Broxham to be there. Utility player in playing in lots of positions. So Delpierre, I think, is pivotal to their performance. And I would have thought that if Nathan Coe wasn't going to play, you were going to be really worried about the victory with Lawrence Thomas in goals. But we always hear goalkeepers talk about the fact that they're part of a defensive unit. And Lawrence Thomas played far better in this run of victory games than he did in the last time. Yeah. And I think it's really because of Delpierre at the back supporting him.
That's a really good call, Mark, and really well answered, I reckon, Warren. He's a super player, Matty Delpierre. And when he's at that Apache missed through injury, that did look vulnerable in that area of the pitch. But when he's back there, he is Gibraltar style. They just can't get past him. He's too
good. Yeah, and I would have said, Half, that if you think about champion teams, the one player they don't want to lose is goalkeeper. And yet they lost Nathan Coe and were able to keep, you know, clean sheets during finals and during the games leading up to it with him there. And that's because I think of the defensive unit that they had.
Which has been a question mark for some time, hasn't it? The back four has always been discussed as one of the issues for Kevin Musket and co. at the Melbourne Victory to try and get right. But this recruitment of Delpierre certainly seemed to go a long way to get that right.
And that goes to what we were talking about before. This is Kevin Musket's team. You know, he went after a guy like Delpierre. He went after a guy like Brisher. I mean, we talk about, you know, getting on top of guys in both halves of the field, you know, having your front and back under control, and he was able to do that. And good luck to him. And they'll be all the better for Delpierre having another pre-season and being strong next season, I would say.
And Mark, give us a call back. A dining and drinks voucher to the value of $50 at the Savoy Tavern, 677 Bourke Street in Melbourne. I'll meet you there before the footy at Etihad. Just on the squad, we know that prior to the finals, Melbourne Victory very keen to sign off on all their major talent, Delpierre being one of those. Bess has got another year. Ben Kalfalo was signed up again. How different do you think the squad, the 11 from Sunday, will look next year? You mentioned Archie Thompson before, and he wasn't in the starting 11, but how different will the Victory squad look next year, do you think, Warren?
Well, I think, Half, if you don't improve, you go backwards, that old saying in professional sport. I think that rings true. The Victory have got some pieces to be able to look at, you know, in terms of where they want to improve. I think you'd probably, we talked about Delpierre. I mean, Carl Valeri, we just typically don't mention Carl Valeri, and he was vital to get such a good player back. I think they'll probably look to strengthen that midfield area, maybe go after another attacking-minded midfielder. I think the recruiting this time around, half will all be about Asian Champions League. We know that Australian sides have to start Asian Champions League in the midst of their season, whereas the Asian teams start at the start of their season in terms of the qualification. Victory need more depth. They've struggled in Asian Champions League previously. So I think you'd probably say that they're going to go for another attacking-minded midfielder like Guy Finkler, because he's not going to be able to stand up to those two games a week. I do genuinely think, as much as Barbarousis is there and Ben Kalfalar is there, I wouldn't be surprised. I would probably think that Archie may have played his last game for the Victory. Asian Champions League might save him, but I think they'd probably go after another attack-minded midfield type of player as well. But they'll look to strengthen in all positions. I think their full backs, Georgeski played, but they weren't really decided on those full back positions, you know, Guerrier, Georgeski. So they've had some interchange there. They might look to solidify those positions, because I don't know whether Georgeski's got another contract. He might be one of those guys. So you'll see improvement across the board. They'll just look to strengthen in all areas. But in terms of their marquee player and then their international marquee, I don't think you'll see much change around those big signings for the Victory.
I'm hearing a little bit today, Warren, that Mark Milligan, the captain of the Victory, the Joe Marston medalist, is being courted heavily by a team in the Middle East and is looking at the offer because it's quite lucrative.
Yeah, look, the money will be lucrative. I tell you, I reckon Ange will be in his ear about the Middle East pretty quick if that's what he's considering. Look, I've said this before and been told by Carlos that I was silly. If Milo Jednak can play in the central of midfield and captain Crystal Palace, Mark Milligan can play in the Premier League as far as I'm concerned as well. And I'd be saying to Mark Milligan, if you want to go and play overseas, aim to play in the best possible competition that you can. I know in the Victory mix, he's not going to get marquee money. He's not going to get international marquee money. But look, he'd still be well paid, I would imagine. And I would be just encouraging him based on going to another World Cup possibly and those type of things. I don't think the Middle East would be a good move, although the money for a guy who's in his late 20s going into his 30s would be very tempting.
What about the opposition? Sydney FC, pretty much over when Jacques Fati went down, according to Graham Arnold, on the weekend. And I'm reading a story today on the A-League website that Mark Yanko's future is very much uncertain. He's left Australia to go back to Austria and with no plans to return. So where does that leave them?
Well, it certainly leaves them having to sign an international marquee. And I think if Graham Arnold in his time at the Central Coast Mariners was reluctant to sign international marquees, and even on this instance, he went after a guy that not many other people knew about in terms of his pedigree, but somebody like that to replace Alessandro Del Piero. If Yanko goes, they're going to need to sign a striker, and they're going to need to sign a 15 to 20 goal a year striker, absolutely, definitely. They've had some issues with injury. Terry Antonis was injured. Other players were injured. Alex Brock had a great end to the season. So they've got to move parts. They've got to actually, I think, improve right across the board in terms of their personnel. They've got a lot more tinkering to do than what the Victory have. And I think it pretty much is almost every line. They had some long-term injuries. Ali Abbas was injured earlier in the season long-term. Sasha Oganovsky was injured early in the season long term. So they've got some guys on their books. Are they going to come back? Are they not? But they need to improve. And I think it's imperative for Sydney, because they could certainly be a team that isn't able to maintain that standard next season if they don't make the changes, particularly if we look at the likes of what Western Sydney Wanderers have already done aggressively with getting 10 players out of their squad. They're going to come hard next season. I'd say Melbourne City will. Adelaide have got the capability of improving with one or two tinkerings, remembering Bruce Gittay didn't play towards the end of the season for them, which was a big loss. So all the teams will improve, and I think Sydney are going to have to be really aggressive to maintain their standard.
Graham Arnold, just before I let you go, Warren, you've been terrific with your time today. Said after the game he's really proud of his boys. He's thought as a successful year, successful campaign. Ultimately not ultimately successful, funnily enough. But do you think, from what you saw of Sydney FC and the way they developed through the year, that it was a really big positive step for that franchise?
Yeah, I don't think it's fair to say sometimes that teams overperformed, but I actually reckon they probably exceeded expectations. To make a grand final in Graham Arnold's first year, the one thing they've done, which is outstanding, They were not defeated away from home except for the grand final this season, which is an outstanding record home and away in a competition like the A-League. So I think they've probably exceeded expectations, but I wouldn't with Sydney FC, if you look at their history, have any confidence necessarily except for their coach's confidence, who I think is really a gun in this competition, that they're just going to be able to roll over and be as successful next season.
It's going to be a very entertaining off-season, but we're still rejoicing for the victory of the Melbourne Victory on the weekend at Amy Park. It's good stuff. Thank you, Warren, for your feedback this afternoon. Nice to have you on the program. Look forward to listening to the boys and the 40 Agos tonight from 11.
No worries, half any time.